I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Rawi Haj has just published a new novel, Beirut Hellfire Society. The book has gotten a number of good notices. All his previous books, De Niro's Game, Cockroach, and Carnival, have been critically acclaimed, bestsellers, and nominated for the major literary prizes in Canada and beyond. This new book takes readers to the Lebanon of the 1970s. In the midst of a violent civil war, we meet Pavlov, the son of an undertaker who was drawn to his father's work following his death. I talked to Mr. Haj about this time and place, death, religion, and in the case of the Hellfire Society, their anti-religious rebelliousness. We also discuss writing and more. The book is published by Knopf. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Rawi Haj. Mr. Haj, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I understand you lived out here for a bit, is that right, in Vancouver?
Yeah, I had residencies, a couple of residencies, one in SFU, and I was in residency at the public library in Vancouver.
So Montreal, that's home for you, right? And it remains so?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. When you revisit Beirut, as you do in this new book of yours, Beirut Hellfire Society, do you do that because you're trying to remember home, or what was home at one point?
Not particularly in this book. I started with a different idea. I wanted to write about rituals, death, a bit of loss. Just got to an age where I lost so many family members and friends, and the whole idea of burial intrigued me. So I started with an image of this undertaker standing on his balcony and watching a procession towards the cemetery, and from there kind of the book evolved. But that was the initial image. I tend to start with an image and a vague idea about the topic. Beirut was convenient because the war was convenient for that novel, because it provides many processions and deaths in general.
I'm interested to know about to talk about death, because I guess we don't do that enough in the West, I should say. There's so much ritual surrounding death, as you've just mentioned. I guess we rely on ritual because we don't talk about it enough. We don't talk about it enough in life, say, that we just rely on what people used to do, say, when death comes around.
Yeah, ritual. I think ritual have certain continuity, but they also get metamorphosed or adapted or integrated in other rituals. I don't think they're stable. For instance, if I go back to my book, and the dancing ritual, I suspect it has, because they dance with the coffin when the dead is young and unmarried, or the woman is still supposedly a virgin and unmarried. So that must be some kind of fertility ritual that stayed and evolved and was integrated into Eastern Christianity or in the local. So I think ritual also kind of then evolve or disappear for that matter. But I think in that book I stressed this kind of dancing ritual because it still exists first. It is out of context because Christian rituals tend to be a bit austere or in general, Abrahamic rituals around death tend to be very quiet and not too noisy, right? But that is that phenomenon of dancing with coffins. I find it very, it's still pagan to a certain extent. Maybe I know that in Africa they have dancing in the presence of death, but to see it in Eastern Christianity, it's a bit of a stretch, actually. A bit of an anomaly. So
when there are rituals that are, say, not I guess, prevalent in Western cultures that one sees, like the one that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Does that deal with loss better, do you think?
Does it deal with loss better? I think, I'm not sure how in a sense that particular ritual of dancing, bringing a band, makes people cry more. So is that helping? I'm not sure, but there's something very symbolic about it.
Yeah.
But it's also the mourning for that chance of reproduction that was missed.
Yeah.
There's narrative there too. The symbolism is very, very strong in that sense.
Mm.
And in a way, it's telling what does the culture value. Clearly values marriage or reproduction. In Western culture, I don't know if that's so important now. Yeah. You know, is marriage defined as a goal? Maybe less and less.
Yeah.
Maybe less and less in a secular or individualistic value. Civilization, like Western civilization. But the mourning is there for sure. So the ritual is much more quiet, right? And it's institutionalized, as you know.
Yeah.
It's not. There's no spontaneity. Maybe there's no. It's more of basically a business, and the ritual is corporate actually to a certain extent. Yeah. I think.
So the Beirut Hellfire Society is. I'll get you to explain what that is in just a sec, but Pavlov's father,
mm-hmm.
and his role with that is what?
Pavlov's father belongs to some kind of also secret religion, or kind of a satoric religion, which I personally created. It does not exist among all these religiosities and religions that exist in the Levant, or particularly Lebanon, because it's a collection of 17 sects that are trying to coexist. So I created a religion that is one chopping, basically, a bit of Gnosticism, a bit of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, and Zarathustrians as well, all these religions that at a certain point intermingled and borrowed from each other. So I figured, why not create that particular religion that is constructed from all the original world of these many religions.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I mean, I know many religions present themselves as some kind of sudden revelation, but if we put them in the context, historical and geographical context, there's a lot of interchanges between these religions. Christianity is a fusion between Hellenic and Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
The influence of Judaism and heretic Christianity on Islam is certainly there, and Judaism has some influence from old ancient Babylonian civilization and Egyptian civilization. So this borrowing and intermixing, and you know, they're all syncretic religion in a way. So I kind of mimicked that historical, you know, phenomenon in the father's religion. Yeah.
And so he's the he gives them. They sort of fund him. The society funds him so that he can, at the end of their lives, say, provide services to cremate.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah,
because of his death, Pavlov inherits this. Is that right?
Yes. Reluctantly. Pavlov, it's ambiguous whether he's a believer or not. I see him as some kind of agnostic, but he, in a way, is also traditional. Though he doesn't believe in his father's religion, well, he doesn't know what actually it is.
Yeah.
But he takes his father's rituals. So, in a way, you know, it's how rituals move what's left with Pavlov is his father. He mimics his father's ritual without having the same depth or same convictions as his father's religion. So what, you know, we'll go back to the ritual. What ends with Pavlov is just these rituals that he does out of respect to his father. And that's what tradition is to a certain extent.
Yeah. Is he because we meet some of the members of the society, I think of one in particular, El Marquis, who sweeps in and I guess talks Pavlov's ear off about his exploits, I hate labeling people, but he seems like an eccentric, right? Pavlov may not be the same as him. In terms of say, the degree of eccentricity. But is he at heart an eccentric, do you think?
It seems like everybody is to a certain extent. I mean, all the characters are, you know. I think I don't know if eccentricity pushes you to the margin or the margin brings the eccentricity, or maybe it's a two-way thing. So it's hard to tell. But certainly, I mean, there's something almost theatrical about the novel. It seems like everyone does an entrance. Everyone, you know. I wanted to put some exuberance in the novel, you know, and in opposition to death and the mourning. I find in that exuberance a bit of humor. Again, I mean, I think laughter, humor. Is not necessarily part of many religions, right? If you look at all the monotheistic religions, they're void of any laughter or humor. That in itself could be considered a heretic act or an act of subversion. It's a bit about madness. It's about exuberance, and when you have that specter of death, and you contrast it with humor, I think it might make a good form in literature. You know,
it makes for an enjoyable read, and I'm curious to know now, because this is set in the Beirut of 1978, where there's a lot of war, there's a lot of destruction around violence. What sort of sense of humor evolves or comes about because of the destruction that's happening all around them?
I think all act of violence like that and when they kind of don't end immediately and there's a stretch, you start falling into the absurdity of things. I think with war, eventually, it comes a bit of, absurdity towards the end. The more war continues, the more I think people tap them into certain madness, and nothing makes sense anymore. Everything dissolves, whether it's ideology, religion, convictions. And it's a kind of unexplicable acts of violence start taking place. I think the more the war endures, the more the things don't make sense anymore. And in that sense, in that absurdity, there's always a bit of laughter and imagination too.
That's the one thing that struck me as I'm reading your book is how, well, I guess growing up in Vancouver, you don't see the there's no way to understand just how violent it was there. Even though it is a state of war, there's a tension there that's underlying everything, whether it's death or sex or any of these other base emotions that people have to contend with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's. I think it drove this novel to, a parade of excess. There is that. Yes, you're right. I think there's excess in everything people do. Then again, that's the madness that comes from a certain violence. But there's something also maybe real about human nature. We try to. I think the biggest challenge always is to contain that violence or that sense of conventionality that brings violence to a certain extent. I think the conventional, what it does is create strong alliance, and within these alliance and fraternity, there's potential for power, and power brings violence, and that's why I think most of my characters they resist belonging, and maybe they're pacifists somewhere, I don't know, but that kind of seeking that alternative marginal life, maybe it's their way of dealing with the inevitable in life, which is violence.
So when you write a book like Beirut Hellfire Society and you want to illuminate or illustrate a part of human nature, is there something that you want to say to the reader? Maybe some wisdom you want to impart to the reader about how to confront certain aspects of life, and death especially, how to live during war, say?
I don't treat literature like a preaching, moralistic object. Literature is heterogeneous, what I try to do, if I'm trying to do anything, is to show the possibilities and multiplicity of our being. I think maybe when us humans are exposed to this multiplicity and not seek that constant homogeneous tendencies in us, where we tend to worship one person or think in one way, maybe literature would help to create some tolerance. It's about exposure, maybe. Mm. It's about exposure to the many, and hopefully within that exposure bring some familiarity and tolerance. So that's why I think that's why the novel has so many different characters, unlikely characters that you find in life. I just wanted to stress the difference that people might be different and they still should be tolerated.
So is that at the heart then, Rawi, of say the wisdom that you might have gleaned?
I'm pretty suspicious of the word wisdom. I think the moment you say wisdom in the context of a novel, it becomes a religious act or a political act.
Yeah.
I think a novel is beyond that. So I won't commit.
But it is largely a solitary experience. So when it's with you for as long as it takes, say, to write a book like this, do you think you're a better person because of it?
I don't know if I'm a better person, but there's some kind of satisfaction that is almost transcendental when you finish a novel. It's very rewarding. There's a sense of pride. You get it, that thing, you get it only after the novel is out. That's on a personal level. On a universal level, you hope that you're contributing something to humanity, and you hope that the book is liked as well, has a good reception. It's an accomplishment. So you accomplish something. It takes a long time. It's a challenge. It's hard.
Now, your previous books have been critically acclaimed. They've been well received by readers. When you're out talking about books, making your books, making appearances and the sort, what is it like to talk about your books, these characters, especially since writing is such a solitary experience? Because you have to go away for a bit to write these things. When the books are finally read and received as well as they are, is that fun, talking to people about them?
It's always, some nervousness involved. Like you said, we're kind of solitary people, and then you find yourself in the public for a short, condensed period of time, and that takes some adjustment. It's necessary, and I think publishers and marketing people, they demand these appearances more and more. Promoting book is part of writing now. There are legal issues, commercial issues that you have to take into consideration. I don't know the word in English, but in French it's double tranchant. It's like a two sides word. In a way you prefer to be to continue in that private life, but that there's a necessity of you want people to read the book, and promote it. So I don't know if there's a less vulgar way to do it, but that's what we do.
but when your characters affect readers as they have, and I'm sure they've told you this over the years, how moved they are by books that you've written. How does that feel?
Great. It's a great reward, and the fact that somebody read your book, it's a great compliment. Every time you feel like you want to hug them, but you can't.
Rawi, I'm enjoying this book a great deal, and it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. I hope this wasn't vulgar.
No, not at all. That was great.
Thank you for this.
Thank you, Joseph.
The book is called Beirut Hellfire Society. It's published by Knopf. Rawi Haj joined me on the line from Toronto around the end of this past August. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plata.